Wow, thank you very, very much, and welcome to Kick Arts. And Emma, we're saying thank you to kick our show off tonight.
We sure are. So for those of you that aren't aware, we've just completed our Boosted campaign to help us raise funds to pay our weekly broadcasting fee.
And we hit the target.
We did. In fact, we made a 102%, just over $5,000 from our listeners, 112 fantastic donors that gave us money. Man, wasn't the last few hours exciting?
I know. I said to you there'll be some special people out there hanging in for the last second. And boy, did they.
Did they? It was like $5, $10. In fact, I was getting Facebook messages from our young intern, Patrick, who was very excited every time it went, we're at 94, we're at 95, we're at 96. And then I got beautiful messages at 11:45 at night. I was asleep. But thank you for messaging me, wonderful people, congratulating us when we hit 100%.
Yeah, and if you haven't tuned in lately, so New Zealand On Air funding got moved to February next year, post-COVID. So Boosted was our way of keeping this station, it's a not-for-profit station, and keeping this program on air. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I guess we should really then kick off. You're listening to Kick Arts, New Zealand's comprehensive arts show, brought to you on Planet FM and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download at planetaudio.org.nz. Tonight we've got a very busy studio. We will meet some classic characters from Titirangi Theatre who are literally waiting for God. We have a brand new music release, plus some Pacific dance that is great for the soul. So to kick off the show with an appropriate song, here's Dido's Thank You. Righto, and thank you. A great start to our special week post, saying thank you to everybody.
Definitely.
And Emma, had a good week?
Yeah, it's been really busy. As we said last week, it's that whole everything that was meant to happen is now happening now. And but exciting stuff, you know, with the, I've got the fundraising concert next weekend that's almost sold out, and then expect the unexpected the week after. So, no, it's been good.
Busy times.
And I've seen two shows this week.
Ooh, we might take a chat about them a little later on in the show.
Sure.
Awesome. And we've got a wonderful studio full of guests. Who have we got tonight, Emma?
So we've got Alan and Nicola from Titirangi Theatres Waiting for God. Good evening to the two of you.
Yes, good evening.
We don't know your stage name yet, so I can't even call you Mr. and Mrs. But Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no, we're not actually Mr. and Mrs.
Well, actually, what it is, I'm on stage, I'm Tom. Tom Jones, Ballard, whoever. And Diana here is Diana Trent.
Right.
So we haven't actually got married as of yet, but the scenario unfolds where we do come to attend at the altar and have the minister in front of us reading and asking us the question, the ultimate question.
Fantastic. Well, we're going to find out more about the show later. And from Pacific Dance, we've got Lecky Jackson-Book and, now, nah, I'm going to say it wrong and I'm going to be really embarrassed.
Joachim?
Is that how we say it? Joachim?
Yep. It's close enough.
It's close enough. So, hi, guys.
Hi. Kia rana.
They both bent in at exactly the same time. See, well trained.
We're a full studio tonight, so people are sharing their mics, so they've got to eat them literally in here. So perhaps let's start with you guys. Tell us, what's your organisation all about?
Firstly, kia rana tātou katoa and happy Cook Island Language Week to all you beautiful people listening. My name's Lecky and this is Kima. We're from Pacific Dance New Zealand, which is an organisation dedicated to promoting Pacific heritage art forms, promoting Pacific dance and music around Aotearoa New Zealand and in the Pacific region.
Fantastic. And you've got something special happening at the moment?
Yes, at the moment we are currently have a Transform series going on, so that goes live on Pacific Dance Facebook page every Wednesday. First session is 1 p.m. and the second session is at 8 p.m.
So what is Transform Series?
The Transform Series was basically an online festival celebrating different Pacific artists. So there are 10 choreographers who have been commissioned to kind of create works online. And basically this all came about because COVID-19 came into the mix and then it kind of killed everyone's plans. But what Pacific Dance New Zealand does annually is they have a festival, a live festival of different choreographers around New Zealand where they create mini pieces and stuff. So this is kind of like replacing the festival. It's an online festival and it's all happening in the digital space, which is really exciting because this doesn't happen under normal circumstances. What is normal?
Yeah. So that means, I mean, absolutely everyone can tune in. There's no restriction. They can just go in online.
Yep, there is no restriction. You just got to give the page a like and follow it so that you'll be kept up to date with the series every Wednesday.
Yeah, so there's no discrimination to whatever background you're from, whatever size, shape you come in, it's all open access, any age. And you don't have to pay one of those, like, sign-up fees or whatever and, like, sign your life away to KiwiSaver. It's not like that. It's pretty much just an open platform where people can jam and, like, learn about Pacific dance.
Awesome. And what's your roles within this yourself?
My role, so I had the opportunity of representing my island, which is Toke Lau, and that was my role in the Transform series.
So when you say that, are you dancing in this, or are you a choreographer?
Yes, I had choreographed a little piece about my heritage, and that was what I had to do.
And Lecky, have you seen this piece so far?
I haven't, but I've seen Kima and he's really amazing in terms of his movement and his dance, and he's really passionate about his Tokelauan heritage. So, I kind of already feel like I have a sense of what to expect So Kimo was the Tokelauan artist that was chosen for this. There are different artists from different islands and different regions and stuff. So my episode is about Niuean dance, and I explore that.
And you're a choreographer as well?
Yes, I'm a choreographer and dancer as well.
Cool. All right. Well, throughout the show, we'll find out a little bit more about you as people and what made up sort of your journey to this point. But Emma, we've got some people waiting for God in the corner.
We have. That's waiting for God, not waiting for Godot. No, so they're not waiting for some imaginative person. But Waiting for God obviously relates to the TV series, the British TV series.
It does indeed. Obviously, you can tell from my accent, I'm from the UK. I kind of grew up remembering this, watching it. It was on kind of in the 90s. So, yes, it's set on the TV series based on a rather bitter, grumpy old woman in a retirement home that doesn't want to be there. And then her man that comes to join her in the retirement home and the escapades and romance that develops.
Wow. And is it an actual written play or is this something that they've taken episodes and created?
No, it's an actual written play. I think it's kind of an amalgamation of some of the episodes, but it was a formal play that was put on first in the UK.
Yeah. Cool.
So, Alan, tell us about your character in the show.
Well, my character, Tom, he is described as a lovely, whimsical sort of a character, has a dropkick for a son whose wife, to quote a line of Diana's, shags for the world 11, and he likes to pretend that he is different people, as I said, Tom Jones, Sir Edmund Hillary and a number of other different people. And so his character develops as this person who dearly loved his ex-wife but then has fallen in love with this lady who lives in the unit next door to him. They develop a friendship, a bond, a caring relationship as only two old people can do who are living next door in close proximity and care deeply for one another, and that bond is developed throughout the play as it transpires over, what did we work, about 15 months?
Yeah, 15 months.
Yeah, yeah. Or so. There's got to be the time for Diana's niece, Sarah, to have a baby. So, I mean, there's 9 months it gets chewed up. So, yeah, there's a few other bits and pieces that happen around the play and, yeah, the antics that Diana and Tom get up to together and the mischief that they can cause around this retirement home that's been run by a sly shyster called Harvey.
Mm. And do we meet Harvey in the show as well?
Oh, yeah, Harvey is one of the characters in the show. I'm Diana. My character is particularly vile to Harvey. She particularly dislikes him and goes out of her way to make his life miserable as often as she can.
And does he have the secretary, like, on
television? He does. He does have Jane, who's deeply in love with him, who follows him around.
Always felt sorry for Jane.
Yeah. Everybody feels sorry for Jane.
I mean, she's a dim-witted puddle duck, isn't she?
I don't.
A dim-witted what?
Puddle duck.
One of my lines, I call her a dim-witted puddle duck.
Yeah. She does come in for a bit of slander, a bit of abuse. And, well, Diana and I, we just dish it out willy-nilly.
Yep.
Great.
And this is on at Titirangi Theatre coming up later this month.
18th to the 29th. Yes, we open on Tuesday the 18th of August.
Brilliant. And who's directing this?
This is Bob Black. So he has been in a production with me at Titirangi previously, but most of his work has been done down in South Auckland. So he's worked in Papakura and Pukekohe mostly, done some work in the centre as well. So he's coming on to direct this. It's his first time at Titirangi, but not his first time directing.
Cool. And we're pleased to see that Bob is wearing shoes.
Yes. It's a good achievement.
Brilliant. And for people who don't know, Tiringi Theatre is a beautiful little theatre out west. When Lochdoyle House had some major refurbishments and earthquake strengthening, I think the theatre scored out of that because you've got basically a brand new venue down there, which it's a lovely, cosy theatre with a nice bar at the start. And that sounds like the sort of show that you need a nice drink to set your evening off right.
Mm.
We've got a lot of retirement villagers that listen to us. I think it's that Sunday night radio thing where they sit there with their glass of wine or sherry and tune into the radio like have always done. Are they going to love this or are they going to be deeply offended?
I think they will love this. It's a definitely a story that talks to kind of the injustices of growing old and how society can treat you as you get a bit older in life. But it's also about Diana and Tom playing with that and being quite naughty and actually being old doesn't stop them getting up to mischief, doesn't stop them going and doing things they shouldn't.
Well, we do think we're still only 23, don't we?
Well, that's true.
Yeah. we think we should be able to smoke copious amounts of drugs and shag ourselves silly and live like young 23-year-olds. But I don't know what goes on.
Is that what 23-year-olds do now?
Apparently.
Apparently so, yeah. So...
We could ask the boys.
Yeah. Well, there we go. We've got the evidence in front of us. I was lucky enough to go into a retirement home to visit some people a couple of days ago and just looking at what they were wearing and the standard brown corduroy trousers, the check shirt with a sleeveless vest. And so I thought, yeah, this is going to be quite easy to get myself dressed for this character.
Brilliant. And Bob Black, our director, was wearing brown corduroys today, you know.
Yeah, just quietly. I mean, there's a few things that I've mentioned to Bob about the way he looks and his appearance and his clothing. I thought, you know, you could actually be doing this part yourself, Bob.
Fantastic. So, look, going along the line now, we'll start one end, work our way down. Tell us sort of your journey that's got you into the arts, into drama, into theatre, into dance. What's been your journey from childhood up to here?
For me, it was... So, after high school, I was a bit... indecisive on what I wanted to do, and then I went and I had seen my cousin's show, which was part of her the institute that she was with, which was Beeper, the late Beeper. And then after that, I just really thought it was cool seeing brown faces on stage, making comedy and all of that. So then I started getting into it, and then slowly I began moving in towards to the field of dance, yeah.
But you enjoyed the comedy side as well, as an actor?
As a performer.
Yeah?
Yeah, as a performer. There's a lot of skills you pick up along the way, and then you just find your main boat, and then that'll be you for a while.
Cool. Yeah. All right, Lecky, what about yourself? What's been your journey in?
I've always been, like, over-energetic since I was a little kid. And in high school, I was kind of like really into performing arts because I used to be in a gang. So I was, believe it or not, I was in a gang. And I found my creative outlet through performing arts. And then I became a little bit of a like activist in high school. And I went to conservative Catholic high school where they banned hip-hop dancing and cultural dancing. And that didn't sit well with my soul. So I rounded up all my friends and we went and protested outside our principal's office. And we wrote petitions and then we got like teacher support.
Did you protest through dance?
We did. Through dance, through song, through music, through everything dramatic like me. And we got Polyfest reinstated at our high school and then we entered this hip-hop competition at the time called Bring It On. At the same time, I was also doing drama in school, so it kind of just naturally fell in. I kind of just naturally fell into that lane and then I went to study at Pipa where Kima was and I graduated as a multidisciplinary artist. So,
cool.
Shout out to Miss Gillies.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, Miss Gillies, she's the bomb from Ross School.
And do you see dance as your thing now in choreography or do you like a good mix?
I like a good mix. I do a bit of everything. I'm kind of I can't sit still. I'm a Virgo, and I'm addicted to being busy. And I don't just choreograph. I dance. I sing. I compose. Same as Kima.
This is my soulmate right here. A Virgo who can't sit still, and that's me.
That is so me. That's us.
There
I can
go.
Feel your energy right now. yeah, so I'm also a playwright and theatre director and producer as well.
All right, we're going to ask you more about that a little later in the show. Excellent, playwright and theatre director. Alan, I got a memo before you came on the show that I was going to have a great show tonight because you're full of life, full of energy and full of fun. No pressure.
No,
so,
not at all.
Tell us about that energetic journey that's brought you here today.
Well, the journey that brought me to the Titirangi Theatre. I've spent my life on stage back when my mother was pregnant with me, doing a stage production of Oklahoma, through to when Mum unfortunately passed away 17 years ago. I was stage manager for a production in Timaru. And so I've spent 55 years prancing back and forth on the boards, done stuff with Howick Little Theatre. I was lucky enough to work with theatre groups over in the UK, Clonakilty Drama League, where we put on a production of Beyond Reasonable Doubt, written by Geoffrey Archer. It was the first production to be performed by an amateur society after having spent 5 years in London. So we invited Geoffrey Archer to come and see it. So we got to meet him, the author. So that was really quite cool. But I did 20-odd years down in Timaru with the South Canterbury Drama League, and a lot of stuff with the Thames Operatic Society, where both my parents were former president, life member, that sort of stuff. So I've grown up through the theatre, doing everything from stage manager, lighting, set design, set building, you name it, in the theatre I've done it.
And what's your preference?
Being on stage.
On stage.
Yeah. I'm doing a fair bit of TV stuff at the moment, commercials and other stuff, Broken Wood Mysteries, that sort of stuff. But live theatre, just being in a small theatre, 100 people, and just having them in the palm of your hand waiting for your next word, it's quite something special. There's a few lines where I've got to turn and look at Diana and there's a good 15 seconds and you just feel the tension mounting in the audience of who's going to say what or what's actually going to happen here. And so there's the look. It's just the eyes that people get to see. And that's the best thing about coming to live theatre is you actually get to sit there and see the whites of people's eyes and see the expression on their face and the anguish and the emotion. So it's quite cool being on stage.
Brilliant. And Nicola, your journey.
Gosh, well, I've always been a terrible show-off, even when I was a child. I was remarkably precocious. I think I used to write plays and put them on and force my friends and family to sit and watch them, even if they didn't want to. Then I did drama at school. I did drama for my A-levels. I did a degree in English literature and drama, and then faffed around doing silly little things for a while, then realised I probably needed a career. Then eventually moved out to New Zealand, and then just joined the local theatre. I live out in Titirangi, so it seemed the local choice. So I went along there. I've done a few plays out at Titirangi over the years that I've been here. I've been here 15 years now. And, I think what Alan was saying, it's that I love live theatre. There's something about live theatre and the feedback that you get from the audience that really, it brings your performance into a whole different level. Mm. It's like rehearsals are one thing and then you go live and people respond and there's something quite magical and wonderful about that.
It lifts you, doesn't it?
It does. Yes. It gives you a real buzz. And I like being funny.
And I imagine in your show, the beauty is if you muff a lineup or anything, you can just improvise because it's the nature of the show. It's not like it's a dead serious.
Absolutely. Like I've done Shakespeare in my time. You can't muff Shakespeare.
No.
You have to get it spot on. This one, we were at rehearsals today. There were a few lines that were not quite how they're written.
It's not what Michael Aitkins, the playwright, had quite written, but it's important that when you're on stage you don't take too much liberty with what's been written and you try and keep as much to what the script writer has said.
And particularly the ones where other people have to follow, eh?
That's right, there's nothing worse than delivering a line and the cue line's not right and your fellow actors standing on stage there looking at you with this dumb blank look thinking, that's not my cue line.
And I can't answer that.
So you just make up something else and you start talking about the weather or something like that.
Or cabbages.
Cabbages, yes.
Yeah. Asparagus.
Yeah. Rhubarb is good too.
Rhubarb, yep.
The author's name's familiar. What else is he well known for?
He wrote also Midsummer Dreams. Midsummer Murders, I should say. I just happened to flick it on the other day, and Michael Aitken's writer, and I thought, oh, he wrote this as well, did he? So, yeah, it's that typical British comedy, absolute farce, these throwaway lines that you just deliver over the side of your shoulder, and the audience rolls with the laughter, and the other person's left cringing on stage.
With a lot of swearing.
Yeah, well, you in particular.
I, in particular, get to swear ever such a lot.
Yes, she really does.
In quite a proper way, though.
In quite a British way, yes.
Mm. I mean, she really emphasises the fact of trying to find God.
And I'm wondering if these young gentlemen in the room have even heard of this show. It's like, I remember sort of, early 20s, it was big for us here
in
New Zealand.
Well, it's kind of that. It's part of that British kind of series where, you know, I suppose it's the next one on, though, from, what was the one where they were Man About the House and the one where they turned the garden and they became self-sufficient. What was that called?
The Good Life.
The Good Life. To the Manor Born. All of those kind of, you know.
What was that other one where husband and wife, and he was very cantankerous and hated the world, she was lovely and friendly. Another British one.
It doesn't sound like you, does it?
See, Madame Bouquet just comes to mind as well with Waiting for God. Yes. You're keeping up appearances. Yeah.
One foot in the grave
that's it. One foot.
And these boys are listening going,
Never heard of it in my life, but I'm very intrigued.
It's very
and
much
I love
in
British
the vein
stuff.
Of the Vicar of Dibley as well.
Yeah, Vicar of Dibley.
A couple of years ago.
Yeah, well, Waiting for God, it did 5 seasons on the BBC. In the mid-90s, so... Yeah.
It was hugely popular.
Very huge, yeah.
And Bob, of course, has got... I mean, he's done Blackadder and other shows, you know, and farce is his thing. I mean, if you think about what he's done out at Hoonua and everything, that's farce, British farce.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, and he's just casting the Vicar of Dibley to do out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his next one.
Well, so as they refer to it, situation comedy. There was two wonderful writers, Stephen Mortimer, David Cook, I think they were, who wrote Man About the House, George and Mildred. They wrote this comedy, situation comedy, about themselves. So, yeah, very funny, very entertaining.
Yes.
George and Mildred, another good classic. Oh,
I loved
George and Mildred.
Good British comedy.
Joelcom, you mentioned comedy before. What sort of style of comedy do you like? I'm guessing it'll be a little bit different to this British humour.
Yeah, it'll be...
Bro-town.
Yeah. Not really. It's mainly island humour.
Yeah.
Yeah. We love physical theatre.
But island cultures are really good at laughing at themselves, which is really, you know, we're not always good at Kiwis at laughing at ourselves.
That's how we cope with pain.
We
laugh it off.
Yeah.
it's a double-edged sword. It's problematic, but it's funny as well when you're in it. Yeah.
Until you look back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. All right, we're going to take a song break now with a bit of Alice Craft, a wonderful Auckland singer, and we'll be back after this break.
Look at the sky, tell me, what do you see? Just close your eyes and describe it to me. The heavens are sparkling with starlight tonight. That's what I see through your eyes. I see the heavens each time that you smile. I hear your heartbeat just go on for miles. And suddenly I know why life is worthwhile. That's what I see through your eyes. Here in the night, I see the sun. Here in the dark, how two hearts are one. It's out of our hands, we can't stop what we have begun. And love just took me by surprise, looking through your eyes. myself and instead I see us. Wherever I am now, it feels like enough. And I see a girl who is learning to trust. That's who I see through your eyes. Here in the night, I see the sun. Just took me by surprise, looking through your eyes. And there are some things we don't know. Sometimes our hearts just need to go. And there is so much that I remember underneath the open sky with you.
Craft, Looking Through Your Eyes, from one of her very first albums a long time ago called Reflection. And now, Emma, just a few people to thank.
Barfoot and Thompson's Glendean are proud supporters of Kick Arts, and we're happy to give them us a kick to keep supporting the arts in 2020. Barfoot and Thompson's Glendean cover West, both in sales and property management. Their personal approach is second to none, and they always go the extra mile for their clients. So if you're looking to sell, buy, or have an investment property professionally managed, get in touch with the team at Glendean, who support the arts and kick your business their way. Barfoot and Thompson's Glendean can be found at www.barfoot.co.nz/Glendean.
Looking for a great night out? Perhaps something a little unexpected? Harlequin Music Theatre invites you to Expect the Unexpected 2.0, a truly unique theatre experience that promises something for everyone. Three shows only, Thursday 13th to Saturday the 15th of August. Bookings at iticket.co.nz.
St. Peter's College, in association with Music Theatre International, proudly presents the musical hit Chess, with well-known hits like One Night in Bangkok, I Know Him So Well, and Anthem. This is one show not to be missed. August 29th to the 5th of September, playing at the Centennial Theatre in Epsom. Tickets from iticket.co.nz. Escape the crazy year for a night of fantastic music, drama, and outstanding talent. Book at iticket today.
God, I love those Australian presenters, Emma.
I know, it's quite funny. But hey, two shows coming up, and it's great to see people back on stage.
And you went and caught a show this week?
I did. I went along to Proportional Misrepresentation, which I'd spoken about a few weeks ago. So they'd had their workshop about a month ago now, and they've been working hard on it. So it was fantastic to go last night and see it reworked and mounted up on stage, not as a reading but as a performance, and with a few changes, with Stephen Butterworth in there. Man, he's a fantastic actor to watch. His Winston Peters was absolutely on point.
Not a line you'd expect to say too often on this show.
What, that Winston Peters is on point? No, he's a bit of a dick, really. Oh.
All right, so, and that's on for a week or two?
No, it's actually, well, it's finished at AMT. Today was its last day. But they are also doing a short season at Covert Theatre in September. And we've got Nicholas and Ben, the writers, joining us in a couple of weeks' time here. I think it's on the 30th.
Awesome. That is fantastic. Great. And as you say, yeah, it's nice to see a lot of things suddenly popping up. In fact, there's a lot to see from about mid-August through to the end of September. There's lots of things
happening. There sure is a lot on.
Across all spectrums. So, guys, you were telling us earlier, Lecky, you're a playwright. Tell us a little bit more about that journey.
So there was a period when I finished drama school and I wasn't getting any acting work, and something that always resonated with me that one of my tutors had said to me was, if you're not getting work, then make your own work. So me and a bunch of friends from drama school got together and then we wrote a script. And that's kind of how my script journey process began, I guess. So I don't have any formal training as a writer, but I've written four plays now, four theatre plays.
Wow, fantastic. And so have they been self-produced, or who's done the four theatre plays, or what have you done with them?
So one was, the first one I did was called Inky Pinky Ponky. It was staged by Auckland Theatre Company in 2015. And the second one hasn't been performed yet. The third one was a commission by Auckland Theatre Company, and that featured in last year's Next Big Thing Festival at Auckland Theatre Company. And then I have the new piece I'm working on is I've been commissioned alongside four other writers to write the script called 48 Nights on Hope Street, which is a new show coming out at Auckland Theatre Company.
It sure is. I was talking with Lynn Cardy about it only the other day, so there you go. Yeah. Fantastic. And Inky Pinky was on at Mangere Arts Centre?
The original season was on at the Basement Theatre. And there have been a few, like, remounts after that. So one was at Mangere Arts Centre, and it's been performed by five high schools in Auckland.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so that's cool.
How does it feel when you hear that a school and students are performing your work?
It's scary because I, you know that saying, like, you're your own worst critic, and I can see all the holes and stuff in my script, and I'm like, oh my god, like, because we wrote that 5 years ago. But it's actually really cool and refreshing when you hear young voices and how they interpret the writing and what their experiences are, and the coolest part is going to the shows and then talking to them after, and they're like, oh, this reminded me of my experience or whatever. Like, that's always like the rewarding part.
Have you thought about going back when you see those little gaps to do a rewrite?
I have, and I've always wanted to. I just don't know if I'm, like, allowed, because I already, like, the script's already been published. So
right.
It's kind of already out in the universe. And I
surely
just
a new edition? A new edition,
yeah,
or something?
Like 10-year anniversary, maybe.
Very cool.
Ellen, are you a writer as well?
I like to dabble in a bit of writing. I've got a few books and bits and pieces that I have been doing. I'm actually a bit of a historian when it comes to the Thames area, so I do... Probably more so than writing, I actually do stage stand-up shows as such. One of them I call Life Upon the Wicked Stage, where I give this recital. It's about an hour's long of my work on the Wicked Stage. Another one about the history of Thames and the engineering down there. So there is a lot of things that I have written, but nothing official as such as of yet.
Okay. Brilliant. Now, sneaking into the studio tonight, we're very lucky to have Yasmin. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Thanks for joining us so late on a Sunday night.
Oh, it's all good. I had nothing on.
So, look, we've been talking dance, we've been talking theatre, and now it's a chance to talk music. So, perhaps for our audience listening at home and on our podcast, tell us a little bit about you and your musical journey before we even talk about tonight's song that we're going to play.
Okay. I try to keep it short, but
we've got plenty of time.
I started playing music when I first moved to New Zealand in 97 from Iraq, and I did it all throughout high school, and then I come from a very academic family, so we all had to go to uni. So I went to uni to study science, and then after I finished a 5-year degree, I went back to music. So now I just work very part-time as a scientist, but do music as, like, the pursuit until it can pay all my bills.
The singing scientist. I mean, that's a show in itself. Come on, we need to write this one up. Yeah.
And yeah, so I did an album in 2017. It did not much apart from a little sync on a TV commercial. It was like a Air New Zealand commercial. My song was in the background, so that sort of paid for that album. And about to release my second album at the end of this year. So yeah, that's the very short, snappy version.
Fantastic. I'm just imagining singing while you're making concoctions. And so are you a scientist? Are you currently looking for the COVID vaccine?
No, no, I work in cancer. Much more morbid.
Wow. Very important. Very
much
important.
Less survival. Important. Survival rates.
We should preface that these two are from a show called Waiting for God. So, you know,
oh, cool.
Any vaccine's appreciated. tell us.
Replacements.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed by everyone, and I just caught 5 minutes of the show. So I was like, oh, you're right, please. Cool. Can we be friends? Yay.
And what do you draw from when writing music? What's your story? I mean, I've had the privilege of hearing what we're going to play shortly, so
oh,
I know
that. Calling it privilege.
But what do you draw from?
So my first album was about boys.
Fair enough.
Because, you know, love is like actually so common to write about. But this next album was about a revolution that started in the country I was born in Iraq, in October last year. That sort of really moved me. And it was around the time where the Hong Kong protests were happening and the Latin America protests were happening at the end of last year. And everything was getting covered in the news apart from Iraqis dying on the street for peacefully asking for you know, basic human rights. And that really kind of hit me the wrong way, that people were valued less, I guess, is how I interpret it, because the same thing was happening in the Middle East, but it wasn't getting covered. And I was super upset about it, but then I realized I have this gift of songwriting. So, yeah, I wrote a whole album about them, actually, and I love pop music, so I tried to make it sound as poppy as possible until you're like, what is she singing about? What's Baghdad Boy? Like, you know. So, yeah, again, that's what the album's about in a very short sort of manner. Two singles have come out, and we've got one more to come out before the end of the year and then the album.
Brilliant. And, like, was it one person in particular that inspired you or across that whole issue? It felt very personal when I listened to it. I felt like maybe there was one that triggered.
I mean, I don't know anybody there personally, so I didn't have a personal connection to it, but I saw myself in these guys and girls because they looked just like me. They dressed like me. They, you know, they were actually much cooler than me, to be honest, because they make art under circumstances where they don't actually have much freedom of speech. So Iraq is meant to be a democratic country now after the 2003 invasion, but actually it's like on paper it's democracy, but people still struggle to express themselves there. So yeah, I guess like I really respect them and I was moved by them, but the bit that really got me was like a particular video I saw, which I can liken to like the recent George Floyd video that kind of really moved people. And I really believe if people had seen that video, which I couldn't eat for like 3 days after I saw it, you know, people would care. So I thought, well, instead of like sharing horrible images online, how about I share the other side, like for Baghdad Boy, the music video. It's just showing these peaceful protesters who were like, you know, dressed like us, cool on the street, just being like, hey, like, we don't want to use violence. We're just asking for less corruption in our government. We're asking for more job opportunities. And you're shooting us on the street. So it's left over 700 protesters dead, really, and no one's been held accountable for their death. So, yeah, just to bring the show right down.
No, that's, we want the mix.
Power to the people, I say.
Yeah, and it makes you appreciate what we have here, too. We're the first to complain, everyone is, about their own circumstances.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you're looking at what's happening around the world, makes you very grateful to be here.
Especially during COVID, because like these protests are still going on. It's 9 months since they started on the 1st of October with the addition of COVID. Like COVID got everybody. It didn't just get, you know, the richer countries or so. Yeah, that's like another layer. But I think I'm so blessed to have been born, well, not born here, but like raised here. I've been here for 25, 26 years. Because I feel like I know it can get better, you know, like I know that true democracy can exist and I know that people can have a voice and, yeah, I don't think it's like fairy tales. I think you can. You just have to have good leadership and an open heart to see each other as human, not as threatening kind of individuals. Yeah.
Do you still have family in Iraq?
No, I don't have any family there. But I think it's like the part that you sort of can't lose, sort of thing. It's like part of your heritage, and a lot of people go, like, I know a lot of people who have like a little bit of Irish in them, you know, but generations and generations ago, and they still go to Ireland and they do the whole tour and they want to find out about their ancestors. So like I was born there, so it's very close to home.
That's your heritage.
Yeah, I identify as both New Zealand and Iraqi. I think the best of both of them is what I take on. Yeah.
We were talking earlier about, you know, the Pacific culture and dance in there and how important dance is to you and Mubu. What about music?
Music, dance, they're all forms of storytelling. And for the Pacific Islands, that's probably the strongest form of storytelling, because most of the old history or were not written down. They were mainly passed through songs and dances.
Yeah, I think that's a common narrative that comes out of the Pacific, is that our ancestors didn't document culture through books. We were a very oral people, and we danced and sang. There's a lot of like great history in our music and in our dances. Like there's the Queen of Tonga, Queen Salote, she composed poetry, and that's how she recorded like what happened in that period of history, you know, like who these people were, who was in charge at the time, all that kind of stuff. And those are compositions we still sing and perform today.
Okay. Well, Yasmin, I think we need to hit go on the music and take a listen to Baghdad Boy. Nothing more awkward than sitting and listening to your own song, but I know we're going to enjoy it.
Baghdad guy, where you born to die? This whole damn world let you down, turned a blind eye. Baghdad Boy. This whole damn world didn't say a thing, cause killing you's now normal. When I say the world, I'm included in that. Oh, babe, I apologize. Bit of a player, you were never my type. No, but since I've seen October, you were all that I want. And now the whole world can try. Boy in the world.
Rivers.
Well done. Congratulations. That is a fantastic song.
Thank you.
And you're right. You've got the pop feel in there as well, but the seriousness of the content, that's quite an unusual mix.
Yeah, it's on purpose, I think. Yeah. Because it's too much to feed people, like, a sad song with sad message, sad video. I think it excludes people. So, yeah.
Tell us about your other songs coming out in the album.
A song called October came out at the start of the year, and it was, first verse was about the October Revolution, just to introduce it to people. And then I touched on the Christchurch shootings in the second verse, just because I felt like a lot of people who look like me were targeted last year.
Absolutely.
And I was like, oh, no one's going to write a song. Like, I was expecting... you know, like I put all this ownership on other people to express how I felt about something, and then I realised, no, actually, if I have something to say, like, even though I'm not a known musician or whatever, it's still, like, my responsibility to make the art and not wait for someone else to answer my prayers kind of thing. So, yeah, so I touched on that. And, yeah, the album's called Songs Over Baghdad, and it's 10 tracks. It's a very, very concise album. It's only 30 minutes long of pop songs exploring my both New Zealand and Iraqi identity.
Cool. And when do you hope to release it?
Before Christmas, yeah. Just sort of waiting on the last video to start and release it. And then shortly after, yeah, just waiting for my publicist to be like, this is a good time. Someone is sort of paying attention to you.
Brilliant. And look, Nicola, in that song break, you were talking about your own journey to New Zealand and moving here and why. So when was that?
Oh, sure. I was saying we moved here in 2005, and I was just saying that part of the reason we moved here was political, and it was around the invasion, and it was that we took great umbrage at what our Prime Minister was doing at the time. We didn't want any part of that. We wanted to not be in a country where our government didn't listen to us, and so we visited New Zealand. We fell in love with it, and we moved here, and it's turned out to be the best thing. We love living here.
And what do you think of everything happening back home at the moment?
Oh, it's really sad. Like, I do still have family at home. I have some very vulnerable elderly parents who are obviously greatly at risk back in the UK. And I feel very sad that the Prime Minister of the UK is treating his people how he's doing. Nothing seems to have changed. No lessons seem to have been learnt. And it's been disastrous management. And, like, thousands of lives are going to be lost. It's very sad.
Yeah, again, we're so lucky to be down here.
Mm. Oh, for sure. I mean, I was online yesterday morning for what's called JTF Friday. So that's our online virtual world with Junis Theatre around the whole globe. And, you know, we're probably the only festival this year that will go ahead in 2020.
Wow.
Because everyone else has had to cancel and postpone, which is really sad, you know. And Australia's hoping to go ahead, but, of course, with what's happening over there and their borders coming crashing down, who knows?
Yeah, and seeing the news tonight with Melbourne not only going into lockdown but curfew as well, you know, which you know, some Europe countries had to, part of Europe had to do as well, that total lockdown, and you cannot be seen on the streets, so taking it seriously. In the break, Emma and I were talking about, you know, who inspired you. So we're going to go around the room and we're going to start with Yasmin and get a sense of who inspired you, and you said a nice thing.
So when you accept your first Emmy, Grammy or whatever the award would be, who would it be that you would thank?
Oh, my gosh. I was thinking, not my family, but I love my family. But my family is, like, super academic, so they were never encouraging of the music. So, but, yeah, who would I thank?
Put you on the spot, eh?
Yeah.
Is it a music teacher, or is it a musician or a writer?
I mean,
that
to be honest, in New Zealand,
love?
In New Zealand, the music scene, people are super open to helping you. So I don't want to, like, drop names, but, like, some big names have really kind of had copies.
Drop away.
I feel too embarrassing to do that. But, like, big New Zealand artists in the New Zealand Hall of Fame are people who have mentored me. So, like, you know, we don't have that barrier. And, again, like, not to just keep saying we're
lucky, 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 but we are, you know. I just feel like it's so cool that I can just send an email to somebody and they can take time out of their busy day to, you know, hear tracks and give me feedback and stuff. So yeah, no, I'm not going to drop names, but yeah, just like other musicians, I would say, because other musicians understand, we understand each other, other creatives, you know, because in, like, if you're not making money out of your creative pursuit, the general public might not look at you as like successful or good, but it's like, it's a process of, so I'll probably thank other musicians.
But I love that comment, you know, thanking people who actually just took the time to get in touch and speak. That is the Kiwi way though, you know, like not just listen, but give you feedback, talk to you.
Definitely. Yeah.
Well, I think that's what gets us in the arts world. If we didn't have each other to tap into, and you look at collaborations, I mean, I think of the years of before you and I were sitting in the hot seat here and I was coming on as a reviewer and a co-host, and collaborations that actually came out of even being here in the studio where people met, and then months later they came back and you were like, well, how did you guys meet? And they were like, well, we met on Kick Arts. And it's kind of like, that's how New Zealand theatre and the arts work, as we work with each other, we collaborate and we create our own work. Like you were saying before, Leckie, that if you don't have anything on, you've actually got to create your own, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Today, oh, sorry, just to like just say how accessible everything is and how we all sort of, I feel, kind of live in the same world. I was in a cafe today and Jamie McDowell was like sitting next to me, and, you know, she's a songwriter. I don't know her personally, but I was like, it's so cool that like somebody who, you know, probably makes a bit of money doing music is like just the same cafe as me chilling out, you know? It's okay.
Yeah. I hope you sort of sang in her ear as you
passed.
Oh,
no, that's too...
Because that's the other thing in New Zealand, we're not very good at putting always marketing.
Yeah, we're not... Oh, I suck at marketing.
We're a bit nervous on that, yeah. So, Nicola, what's you going to be your acceptance speech? Who are you going to thank?
Okay, mine's going to be a little bit more higher brow. just in terms of... I don't know her. So when I was young, Maya Angelou was probably one of the most huge inspirations for me, a woman that should have been broken, should have not been able to rise above what she lived with, and she did. And she became one of the most amazing writers and poets of her generation. When I lived in the US briefly, when I was at university there, I had the privilege of going to hear her talk. She came and did a free talk for the Women's Studies Department, and I met her afterwards. And I cried and cried and cried and cried so much that when we were walking home, one of my friends stole the poster from the talk. And I still have that now framed in my living room, and it still is something that I look at and think of how amazing she is and the strength she had, and that kind of is a very powerful thing for me.
It's interesting. Nicola answered that as Nicola personally, but man, that could be Diana Trent's answer as
it
well.
Could
that
well
felt
be.
Like you were in the
it
in
could
the
well
role
be Diana
there
because
as well.
She talks about how women should carpe any diem they goddamn well please. So yes, it could well be Diana.
Brilliant. And Alan, who are you thinking?
Well, I think probably the first person I would have to thank would be my mother. She was very inspirational in a lot of the stuff that I did on stage. Having had the pleasure to work on stage with her in a lot of productions, but then also being able to work on stage with my children as well in productions. My daughter Zalika, when she was 7, we did a pantomime of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. She was one of the dwarfs. I was the town henchman as such, and just got to play all those antics on stage. But when you ask who has really been inspirational, I've watched a lot of people on stage in New Zealand, George Hanare in particular. Saw him do a play in Timaru. Absolutely loved him and what he did. I can't remember the name of it, unfortunately. But also my best mate, Campbell Smith, who's a trained opera singer, he gave me a lot of inspiration in our younger days. My partner now, Anna Dunwoody, who's a international harpist, composer. Emma, you were talking about doing big collaborations during the COVID lockdown. Anna was doing a lot of international collaborations with different harpists from around the world and putting pieces together. And that whole online learning became quite instrumental. And so you can very easily, I found nowadays, just go to Dr. Google and find out how to do something. I was struggling with a word in the play, petit bourgeois, and I was forever fluffing it up. So I just saw YouTube bourgeois, and it told me how to pronounce the word properly, and I was really butchering it, I was. So, yeah, Dr. Google is probably someone who I think a lot of people should thank when they're... Yeah.
Absolutely. It all has its influences. Joachim, what would you be saying at your acceptance speech?
Probably someone that kind of inspires me would be my uncle. So on my first... audition day to make it into the late people. I had a script on me and I just had to act that out, and then I probably didn't do a really good job with it, and then they told me to do it how your uncle would have done it. And yep, all of a sudden it was pretty close to home. I felt comfortable with showing that side of home.
Nice.
And yeah, all the kind of dramas you get at home and you get to express it differently.
So how has family influenced you?
By keeping my head busy at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting term. Yeah. Your acceptance speech, would it be for comedy, dance, drama? What do you think what's the one you're going to grab that award from?
He sings as well.
Okay, all right, really singing humble. As well.
Maybe I'd probably say physical theatre, yeah.
No?
Yeah, I don't say much, but I like to move.
Yeah. Cool. Oh, getting very intrigued to be watching their online performance. And Leckie, who's your inspiration?
Well, I'm a really communal person, and I've grown up with an entire village. An army, like, behind me. I'm so fortunate that I have a giant, loud Pacific Island family. And you're so right, Emma, it's all about collaboration and, like, working together with other people. And I guess my two best teachers in that field are my grandparents, who have both passed on now, but both my grandparents were early migrants in the 1970s. They came here. They were visionary. They had dreams and hopes for their grandchildren. Yeah, and I was fortunate to be raised by my grandparents, so I wasn't really, I wasn't living with my birth parents, I was living with my grandparents, and my grandfather was like the most humble guy, and he was, he taught me patience, and then my nana was like the opposite of my grandpa. She was really feisty and vicious, so she taught me how to have a backbone and stand up for myself. So I guess, like, yeah, when I look at who I am today as a person, it's definitely a combination of my nana and my granddad's teachings, so I'd thank them.
You mentioned earlier your involvement in gangs.
Mm-hmm.
How did you break that?
How did I break that? Okay. Yeah, I guess when you're a teenager and you kind of feel like you don't belong anywhere, then you search for it elsewhere. So I got into the gang circuit, and then I kind of broke free when I joined performing arts in my high school. Cool. So, yeah, connecting with cultural dance, with the choir and music, doing drama in high school really helped me. It gave me a creative outlet. And I know there are so many kids out there who are like me that grew up and just had all this, like, frustration and energy and had nowhere to kind of... Because I sucked at sport. I was, like, always picked last for the sports team. My brothers were all sportsmen. So I was, like, the disappointing child in the sports field. And I wasn't as good at rugby as them. But, I found my outlet in performing arts. And
I think that's a common story, especially... Yeah. You know, out in South Auckland, I mean, I think of the students I've taught over the years, and, yeah, you know, that was what a lot of my master's was on, was, you know, that recognition that what gangs and dance crews and theatre companies are, they're actually the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, gangs are about talking the same talk, walking the same walk, listening to the same music.
And ironically, feeling safe in that space. I mean, even though a gang from the outside world isn't always safe, but you're safe when you're in it. And, yeah, and you're needing that place to belong to.
You're a part of the, like, the machine, eh? You're serving the vision of whatever the vision is, I guess. And there's the gang leader, just like the director or the choreographer. Yeah, so, like, a lot of my gang skills I actually transferred into performing art.
Yeah.
But you think, you know, what, we're talking 15 years ago with all the crump battles out at Manukau and the fights that they actually started. And, you know, that was daily newspaper stuff all around New Zealand about what was going on at Manix, and, you know, the fact that you couldn't go to Manukau Mall on a Thursday night without seeing a cultural fight. And often it started as a dance battle or ended with a dance battle, or it was culture versus culture. And, you know, that's such a ridiculous part of South Auckland as well. It's kind of like, we're all in New Zealand. Do we actually need our cultures to fight against each other as well? We're all minorities. Let's actually stand together.
I think a lot of that mainstream narrative is what inspires my work today, because I feel like a lot of people are spoken for, and it's and a lot of mainstream media puts this like negative connotation on South Auckland. But I never see the media celebrate like all the amazing churches or all the amazing choirs or dance crews and stuff that come out of South Auckland. So
I think people like Paris and that have made a huge difference. What she's done by taking our cultures to the world stage and winning awards has been phenomenal. And also for the arts, because suddenly you've got these kids that aren't actually going, dance sucks, it's for pussies.
Yeah, now dance is cool. And we have lots of little Paris people rising up.
Definitely.
Awesome.
Everyone wants to wear a crown.
Now, in the retirement village of Diana Trent and Tom Ballard, there's a bit of gang stuff happening, and they're ganging up on people, rather. You know, tell us about some of the antics that they get up to.
Well, I mean, we are described as square pegs who are trying to be put into a hole that doesn't really fit us, of these goody-two-shoes, straight and narrow elderly people who don't eat too much, don't complain, and go to bed at 8 o'clock. They are what people would consider to be the norm. Now, Diana and I are not the norm. We like to steal Porsches and go to Bournemouth.
Porsches, even?
Porsches, yes.
My goodness, yes. Not just a random car.
No, not just a random car. No. We acquire a Porsche.
We steal the good ones.
Yeah, none of this slap-happy stuff. Yeah, high-speed, near-death experience to loosen the bowels of a summer's morn.
At your age, you have to be worried about loosening bowels. As in your character's age size.
Yeah, well, that's it. They say you get to 65 and you shouldn't trust a fart. There's some great lines in the play, and there really is a lot of anarchy that goes on, Diana and Tom.
Mainly Diana.
Yeah,
we're
mainly
dragging Tom along.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we're honest.
Yeah, she's the renegade who's never been married, and she's had one night stands with Keith Richards and all sorts of people.
Plenty of husbands, none of them mine.
Yeah. So there's the antics that we get up to that some people in retirement villages could probably relate to, and they see the Millie Dawkins and who's that other old
Basil the baby stud.
Yes, yeah. I mean, all the characters from a retirement home, they all make an appearance one way or another. So yeah, there is the antagonism that goes on, but that's really with the management of the establishment, who are very tight with their budget.
Yes.
And so, yeah, there's not a lot of room for movement and getting good vegetables.
Diana's life mission is to make Harvey's life hell, who is the care home manager. Goes out of her way to do it.
Looking forward to seeing this one. Yasmin, this is a little left field question that popped into my head before when we were talking. During COVID times, when we were in lockdown, was that a time to create some music and get ahead on your album?
I just slept in. I didn't leave the house. I did. My bubble was just me, so I didn't leave the house for 2.5 weeks, and no one judged me for it. It was great. Yeah, no, I did. I couldn't. I think just the energy, I think, in the air felt a bit anxious the first couple of weeks. Yeah. So, I personally didn't, but I had already made an album, so it's all right. I took lockdown off.
Nice to take lockdown off. Many people, I would have loved to have taken lockdown off.
You made some work?
Three teenage sons. I'd have loved to have been in my own bubble.
it was nice.
Maybe that's what we needed to do. We needed to, like, drive out of town and found somewhere.
Maybe that's the trick. If there's ever another lockdown, we get a few days warning. It just so happens to be when you're on your way to that batch somewhere. Yeah. Hey, we're going to take a music break, and then to finish, we're going to ask all our guests, and I'll give them time to think, our famous Kick Arts question. If you could sit down with your 16-year-old self, what would you say to them? Your Mind, the fabulous Vonda Shepherd, talking about an old television series. Who can remember in the studio? What was she famous for singing every night on a television series? Ooh, it's an American one.
Was it Golden Girls or something?
No. It was Ally McBeal.
Oh,
and every night, Ally McBeal at the end of the show went down to the bar, and there was Vonda Shepherd at the bar live playing some fantastic song.
You clearly watch too much TV.
Yes, obviously.
All right, so, Emma, your famous question.
Oh, my famous question. So we're going to ask each of you, if you could sit down with your 16-year-old self, what piece of advice or what would you say to them? So let's start at nearest to me, Leckie.
I'd say to my 16-year-old self, don't do it.
Don't do it?
Yeah, and that's...
In reference to the gang stuff, where you were rather than dancing.
No, that's in reference to performing art.
Oh.
Don't do it. And that's what Oscar Kightley said to me when I was a 16-year-old. And he left my high school and I was like heartbroken and I was like, oh my God, like someone I look up to just said don't do it.
And that inspired you to do it?
It did, because I wanted to prove him wrong. Yeah. And then when I met him like 10 years later in the industry, he's like, if you're a real artist, you won't let anyone stop you from achieving your dream. And I've always like held that really close to me, because I think like a lot of artists have this fear that they're going to fail and stuff. And I just read The Alchemist the other day and like this quote popped up and it was, the fear of failure is the death of dreams. So yeah, I just try not to be afraid and just dream and let the dream write.
Beautiful. And moving along, what would you say to your 16-year-old self?
I'd probably say do everything. Yeah. Because at this age, I'm still trying to work out what I actually want.
But right, so give everything a go. Yeah.
Do everything.
Yeah, I guess. Cool. And if you start from a young age, then it keeps you ahead trying lots of different things. Okay.
Alan?
Well, I mean, if I was to go back and look at the 16-year-old self and myself, the one thing I would say is to be old and wise, first you have to be young and stupid. And I certainly qualified for that. I was a bit of a hangman. I probably still am, a lot of people would say. But something I often say to people is live the journey, because every destination is the doorway to another. And so I've always looked for that. If there's an opportunity there, just have a look through the door. There might be something more and behind it. So live the journey, because every destination is the doorway to another.
Nice. I like that one. Yeah, that's a really good one.
Mine might be a bit useless in response to that, Alan. I think I would say to my 16-year-old self, don't be a smart ass. You're not as clever as you think you are. And he's just not that worth it.
Nice.
Oh, I feel like there's quite a story there. What a shame we're down to our last 10 minutes.
All right, it's a line I've put in the my first album and again sneaked it into my second album, but it's You're the Answer to Your Own Prayer. Just to remind myself, like, you don't need validation or completeness in anybody else, but yourself. Yeah, we're all complete by ourselves.
That's cool. Where do you want to head with your music?
Oh, I would love it to provide me a full-time income. So, yeah, that's what I'm working towards.
That's the goal?
Mm.
Brilliant.
Sell enough albums, play enough shows to not have to do science anymore.
Cool. Although you're doing science for good too, so, you know, both.
Yeah,
I'm
very grateful, but it's not my passion.
Yeah. Do you sing in the lab?
No, I'm not in the lab. I'm not that kind of scientist. Yeah, just in the hospital, that's all. Yeah.
Okay. So how can people support you? Where can they track your music down to not just listen but support you? So obviously, what's the good sites they can be pulling your music from?
You just go to my website, yasminmusic.com. YASAMIN music.com, and I'll have links to everything.
Wonderful. Okay, that was short and sweet plug there. Titirangi Theatre, Waiting for God, how can we book tickets for that one?
It's really simple. You can just hop on the website, titirangitheatre.co.nz, and you can book directly online. We've got evening shows and matinees, so there's a choice of both.
Fantastic, and it runs from the 18th to the 29th of August.
Indeed it does.
And also there's tickets available from the Titirangi Pharmacy as well.
Yes, if you happen to live that way.
If you live
out
local.
That direction, yes.
Excellent. You can go and pick up your Panadol, because you'll have a headache after all the laughter.
But it's always nice to be able to still walk in somewhere and book a ticket. I don't know. I mean, it's great that you can go online and it's so instant. But I still like standing in front of a ticket thing and looking at a picture and going, which one do I want? Anyway.
Oh, that's showing your age now, Emma.
Look, when you line up in Broadway, you still have to go in and look at the picture.
True.
Just because Broadway's closed at the moment,
luckily,
it will happen again soon.
Far enough away.
Oh, that's right, you missed out. Oh, yes. Don't rub it in.
Shh. Get out. And final word from Diana Trent. and Tom Ballard, if audiences were listening, what would those characters say about coming to Bayview Retirement Village? Well, I'm putting you on the spot.
Well, I think it's actually a wonderful retirement village, and any elderly people, senior citizens over the age of 60, I believe that's when you become a senior citizen, is it? At 60?
Apparently.
Bayview Retirement Village, wonderful place to come and spend the last months, years of your life. Food's wonderful. The staff are just, oh, I can't say enough about them, but it's the other residents of the retirement village who are just outstanding individuals.
And that's why you give the elderly a bad name.
Yes, a bit buttery I am sometimes.
Brilliant. Titirangi Theatre's Waiting for God. Tickets available at titirangitheatre.co.nz. And gentlemen, how can we find out all about your Transform series?
You can hop onto Facebook, go to Pacific Dance New Zealand Facebook page, give it a like and follow it, and you should be kept up to date with the Transform series. And there's an episode every Wednesday. From the first session is at 1 p.m. and the second session is at 8 p.m.
Same performance twice a day?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and how long is this running for?
It's running for 10 weeks, so there's a different artist every week. And some of the sessions are actually they're interactive, so you can, like, dance from the comfort of your living room while Kima instructs you on how to do tokelau movement. Yeah, so there's different something in store every week.
Emma, I mean, that would, you know, it's a shame our booster's finished, really, because people would have paid to see you and I dancing along to that on a Wednesday afternoon. They would have paid to stop us, at least.
Maybe you.
And when do you know what date yours features?
I was last week.
I'm yet to find out.
So if you were last week, though, can we go on? I'm going through it at the moment. Am I going to find last week's on here and I can still watch it?
No, so everything's kind of, it's done live on the week of. But I think at the end of the series, they're going to upload all the 10 videos. Yeah.
Episode 3, Nesian Dance, is still on here from 2 weeks ago.
Is it? Oh, my God. Okay, why am I not on there?
So, Lexi will be chatting to the producers tonight and making sure that's up online for us to have a look at. And finally, gentlemen, why is dance so important this year? You know, it's this crazy 2020 COVID year. Why do you think it's actually really important to have dance in our lives?
That's a really good question.
Dance is a form of expression, and not everyone can express through words. And during lockdown, there was a lot of restriction on physical activity. So there are so many cool videos you would have seen online of people dancing in their, like, lounges and stuff, and on the trampoline and on the back in the backyard. Yeah, lots of TikTok. So dance is really current. It's always changing. It doesn't discriminate. There's so many different forms of dance. So give it a try.
And I'd say the same about comedy and about music. I mean, I think, you know, COVID lockdown was crazy time for me, but music was something that just gave you that grounding, and then to be able to watch something, to have a laugh, and encouraging people still to come out, because there's still people that I'm meeting in my role that have got used to staying home, still that nervousness, but actually coming out for some comedy's a good excuse.
Oh, very much so. I mean, a comedy at the Titirangi Theatre, you won't find better. 18th to the 29th of August. Get along and see it.
Double plug. Nice. Triple plug. Hey, thanks for being amazing guests tonight.
Thank you for
debuting your song with us.
I meant what I said.
It was a privilege to hear it, and I can't wait. It's your job now to stay in touch with us and let us know when your next one's coming out.
Oh, you said it. I'll be emailing you.
Brilliant. And we'll happily launch your album when you're ready. So
very sweet. Thank you. Make sure
you come and share with us. But thanks, guys, for being great, and good luck with everything that you've got coming up. Emma, how can people get in touch with us?
You can get in touch with us. Let us know about your projects or your journey. If you want to come on the show, at kickarts1@gmail.com. Or, of course, make sure you're following us on Instagram, kickarts.nz, or on Facebook.
Yeah, and all forms of art. So, you know, if you've written a book, you've got some visual art, you're doing some theatre,
sculpting,
dance,
photography, knitting and crocheting. It's a thing now. It's a big thing.
Yeah, any form of art, we'd love to chat about it. And if you're not in Auckland, we can get you on the phone and talk to you, so you don't need to be based here. One comment I'd make, noticing our inbox, and we've had to turn a few people away, is give us a few weeks' notice so we can schedule in ahead of your event to promote it like these good folk tonight, so that we can get the message out. And if you're a wonderful music artist like Yasmin, send us your music so we can profile that as well.
Yeah, remember our social media, we want to keep things current, so we're happy to share and let people know via our social media.
Have you got another busy week ahead, Emma?
Always a busy week. So at the end of this week, we've got Blast Off, which is the Junior Theatre Festival New Zealand launch and fundraiser. So
Tapak, looking forward to that. A couple AMT. Of seats left. AMT.
At
yep.
AMT, yes, only a couple of seats left for that. And we've got six very talented young Auckland students, along with a group of 27 students performing a dance number, and then the soloists, and Emily Robertson and Blake Tuke. So it's going to be a fantastic night there.
Great. And I caught Emily's online show the other night that she put up with all her wonderful friends singing.
Her virtual concert was absolutely fantastic with young singers from, again, around the world. The connections Emily's made via her social media has been phenomenal.
Yeah, a few familiar faces surprised me in there.
Stephen's daughters were on, were one of the guests, and he hadn't seen it until I shared it with him.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
We're not giving evil looks to the corner where one of the daughters is currently sitting.
Fantastic. Hey, and just to close the show, a big thank you again to everyone who supported our Boosted campaign. We'll be proud to bring Kick Arts through until 2021 with you, and hopefully our funders and sponsors will be back on board, plus a new website coming soon that's going to be a one-stop shop for all these guests and events that come online so people can track down our wonderful artists.
Definitely. We love to support the arts, so remember that we can send reviewers. We're happy to come and see your shows, and that helps us promote you as well.
So very important we go out with a song that says thank you, and make sure you have a great week, and remember to
kick some arts.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down a road and back again. Your heart is true, you're a pal and a confidant.
Thank you for being